This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662. Or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Layla Mudin's our Hoffman Center nutritionist. She is a registered dietitian and is the possessor of a master's degree in the field of nutrition. How are you doing today, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So, let's see. Why don't we proceed directly to questions? We have a whole lot of questions this week.
Okay. We've got our first question coming from Tom. I enjoy listening to your radio show. Can you comment on forskolin, which is Coleus forskoli, a naturally occurring chemical compound whose highly regarded association with being a potential weight loss catalyst and muscle building accelerator? This is from Tom. So, Coleus, it's a chemical compound found in the roots of the plant Plectranthus barbatus.
Wow.
Ah, yeah.
That's a mouthful.
Now, that's a mouthful, exactly. I almost couldn't get it out.
I'm looking up here, and it says, it is a labdane titerpene that is produced by the Indian coleus plant.
Hmm.
And you know, you've done a little research on that. I just tell you what I know briefly.
Yeah.
It seems to raise levels of cyclic AMP,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting because that's a chemical messenger for so many different processes in the body.
Yeah.
AMP and GMP are chemical messengers, and they have various functions at the cellular level. So that's a promising mode of action. However, it suggests that there would be a wide range of effects, both good and maybe not so good, maybe potentially a little unpredictable about, it.
That's true. Well, I think, according to anything I'm reading, the jury may be still out on its use for weight loss. It probably wouldn't be the first thing
right.
we would reach for. It has been used to treat skin conditions like psoriasis, eczema.
Mm-hmm.
It's been used for painful menstrual periods,
mm-hmm.
for irritable bowel syndrome,
mm-hmm.
for bladder infections,
mm-hmm.
trouble sleeping, urinary tract infections,
mm-hmm.
Chest pain, cancer.
I see here a potential use for asthma, and I've also,
mm-hmm.
one of the uses that I remember is for glaucoma, treatment of glaucoma.
Mm-hmm.
The way it sounds, it's not to be confused with foreskin, okay?
Right.
extract of foreskin, which
right.
actually has been used as a source of stem cells or for regenerative potential, strange as it may seem. But forskolin is from a plant source. And, I do see it in some of bodybuilding formulas, you know, that somehow
mm-hmm.
this is supposed to be helpful. But, I've tracked it for many years and, you know, the mark of a successful supplement is something that initially gets some buzz, but that continues to get buzz and then they continue to amplify on its efficacy with more and more studies, and then more and more, maybe even just anecdotal reports that it seems to help people. And I haven't seen that happen for forskolin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or forskolin.
I've not seen much on it either.
Yeah.
myself. So for weight loss, I mean, for weight loss, one of the best supplements, I think, is EGCG to provide some metabolic enhancement. First of all, there's no magic bullet supplement for weight loss, really.
Exactly.
You have to follow the right diet. You have to exercise.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is most important.
Right.
So EGCG may be, what is that red pepper? Oh, capsaicin.
Capsaicin natura, right, which is the modified extract of red pepper that doesn't give you that flushing and redness and the burn.
Yes.
But it seems to be a little bit of a thermogenic agent, fat-burning agent. I do see some comment on Forskolin for providing a safer suntan, a sunless tanner, all right? The reference is to 2006, and that I haven't seen a lot subsequent to that in terms of any follow-up on that. It's actually research at the University of Kentucky. So it's sort of a compound in search of an application with some potential, but hasn't really broken through, in my opinion, to be on my A-list for supplements.
Right, right. Okay. Tom, thank you for your question.
Sure.
All right. We've got an email from Charlie. Charlie wants to know about Broccomax, and what do we think of Jarrow's new updated Broccomax product? Dr. Hoffman, when I looked at the Jarrow site, I saw that they had Broccomax available in a time-release form.
Mm-hmm.
But I know you've written now extensively about Oncoplex.
Right. Yeah, I wrote
the contender and the winner in.
Right.
Yeah.
So what this is about, and you can refer back to my article at drhoffman.com. I wrote an article on sulforaphane. And sulforaphane is a very interesting compound because it is demonstrably anti-cancer in many cancers. It's an exciting compound. Originally, the research was done at Johns Hopkins University in the 90s under Paul Talalay, who I understand. I tried to recently secure an interview with him, but they said, you know, he's retired. He's in his late 80s. He's not even really doing much. But the same group at Johns Hopkins that developed Brocco Sprouts, which is a high sulforaphane form of cruciferous vegetable for anti-cancer purposes, has now developed Oncoplex. Oncoplex delivers a high amount of glucoraphanins, which are precursors to sulforaphane. See, sulforaphane, it doesn't exist so much in nature. It has to be biotransformed in the body through either our intestinal flora. Or sometimes there's a chemical reaction that occurs when you chew cruciferous vegetable. So it's tricky. You can't really put sulforaphane in a capsule. So that's problem number one. You have to use a precursor. And then the hope is that the precursor will be successfully transformed to sulforaphane in your body. Now, my understanding, and I hope I'm not misrepresenting it, and somebody from Jarrow may, you know, contact me or someone who knows about this, but I think they upgraded their Broccomax product, which I have used for a long time.
Yes.
And it's said to include some sulforaphane that helps, it includes the enzyme that is designed to convert the glucoraphanins into sulforaphane. Okay.
Myrosinase.
Thank you very much. And myrosinase is interesting. It's found in certain foods like horseradish. And that's why in the article.
Cabbage.
What I suggested is that people take advantage of certain food combinations to get the full benefit of the glucoraphanins and to get them properly converted into sulforaphane in their bodies. To There's some controversy as to whether you can get myrosinase into a capsule in a, you know, kind of a freeze-dried form, because it's a compound that is not biologically active when it's just sitting there. Mm-hmm. It needs to be in a, I think, in a liquid system or a dynamic biological system to do its work to make the sulforaphane that your body needs. This is in the realm of supplement controversy. You know, there's some supplements where, you know, there's a controversy, or, you know, you use alpha-lipoic acid or R-alpha-lipoic acid, you know, which is the mm-hmm. the best form.
Right.
Do you use indole-3-carbinol, or do you use DIM, diindolemethane? There's some controversy over that. And there's some controversy about the best delivery form. And, of course, with companies competing with one another to come up with a better delivery system so that sulforaphane is maximized in the body. In addition to its anti-cancer effects, there's a detoxifying effect of sulforaphane such that it may be helpful for some neurological diseases. And there's even a fascinating study that shows that sulforaphane may help kids with autism because it's a detoxifying agent. And it was a stunning study.
Sulfur,
needs to be replicated, needs to be done with a larger number of subjects. But it was really impressive that sulforaphane could have an impact on these kids with autism. It's a fascinating compound, and, you know, our current bet is with this new product, Oncoplex, which comes in two forms. There's sort of an Oncoplex, which is Oncoplex Light, which is for general prevention. It's cheaper. And then there's Oncoplex, a stronger form of Oncoplex, which is certainly more expensive, but we use it in our active cancer patients. And, mm-hmm. You know, we'll have to see how this controversy plays out. You know, is it that Jarrow's come back with a better form of Brachomax that performs as well or better than Oncoplex? The word isn't out yet.
Yeah. And I would mention to everybody, eat your cruciferous vegetables.
Right.
Eat your broccoli sprouts, eat your cabbage, eat your...
And you know, the other concern is there a goitrogenic effect from eating cruciferous vegetables? And indeed there is, but it's not as universal as some people claim. You know, it's not like, oh, you eat any kind of broccoli and you're going to get a goiter. It actually is more confined to certain subspecies of kale, Brussels sprouts to a certain extent. You know, perhaps if you juice Chinese cabbage, you know, have enormous amounts of it, you could get a goitrogenic effect. In other words, a thyroid suppressing effect. For those who already have thyroid problems and are on medication, I think that effect is negligible because you're already depending on medication. So even if you slightly suppress your own thyroid production, the medication is going to back you up in terms of sufficiency of thyroid. So I don't think that that's a big consideration with either cruciferous vegetables or with these supplements. I don't think you can induce a goiter or suppress your thyroid function with these supplements. That's probably not going to
happen. Just as an aside, Dr. Hoffman, and only because I just recently wrote an article in our newsletter about taking your thyroid medicine with water, not coffee, because coffee has been found to interfere.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Thank you for bringing that up because, I tell you, you come up with some amazing stuff, and it truly is a compliment to what I do because you get into some areas that I really haven't even plumbed the depths of some of these interactions. So tell us about that one.
Yeah, apparently there was a case study in a woman who was having coffee every morning with her thyroid medicine.
Yeah.
She just started drinking coffee, and over a period of about 6 weeks, she gained weight for no good reason. No changes in her diet. Mm-hmm. Her medication dosages weren't changed. No changes in her lifestyle or her sleep patterns. Everything was the same.
Right.
Except for this inclusion of coffee with her thyroid medicine.
Uh-huh.
So, and there was other research prior to this that showed that coffee can interfere, whether it's Italian coffee, meaning espresso coffee, or even drip. American coffee is what they call drip coffee, that it can interfere. So what the advice always is to take your thyroid medicine first thing in the morning, right, for most people,
right,
and then not to eat breakfast for about an hour.
Right.
Well, apparently, don't drink any coffee either, because a lot of people are having a cup of coffee even soon after they take their thyroid medicine, like 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes later, and this may be interfering.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, right.
Good stuff.
And it's not the caffeine.
And
it's
that's
nothing to do
too.
With the caffeine. Yeah, because there are so many different compounds in coffee, they've not been able to pinpoint what is actually interfering with T4. So, but once the coffee was taken away in this particular case study, her TSH normalized, her thyroid stimulating hormone normalized, and all of the rest of her thyroid markers became more normal.
So here's the question. I wonder if this has implications for whether people should take their supplements with coffee or even decaf. And the answer is we don't know yet.
Hmm. Interesting. Since this was found not to have to do with caffeine.
Right.
As the interferer, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So no, that's a great question. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we do know to let people know not to take their supplements if they're taking a fiber supplement such as Consol or Metamucil or something like that, because chances are you're not going to absorb it all that well with all that additional fiber. But I'm not talking about regular dietary fiber in your vegetables and your fruits or anything like that necessarily. So, yeah. Well, we do know, interestingly, that the tannins in tea can inhibit the absorption of iron from meals, which is not great if you're anemic and you love to drink your glass of iced tea or a cup of tea after a meal.
Right.
But it's fine for people who have an iron overload.
Yeah, we encourage people who have an iron overload to have a lot of tea. Regular, brown tea, or even green tea. But I think the brown tea may be even more efficacious at interfering with iron. Yeah, we're getting off topic, but as we tend
it's worth mentioning. Yeah,
extreme of consciousness here is it's interesting. The way they determined that iron deficiency could be caused by tea was that in Israel, you give babies something in a bottle, just to suck on, because babies they want to suck on something, and after a while, you give them too much milk and they just fatten up. So you give them, some water. Yeah, water's not too tasty. So some Israeli moms were putting tea in the bottle and having their baby, suck on the tea just for gratification, oral gratification. And what they found was that if they consumed a lot of tea, regular tea, they became more iron deficient. So.
Mm. Mm. Well, interestingly, because of the tannins, first of all, I would worry about the caffeine for an infant.
Yeah, exactly.
Number one.
They're making a lot of
number
sense.
Number two,
right?
because tea is so tannic, tannins are the things that, dry us out, our mouths, but it also dries up the GI tract.
It's an astringent.
It may promote constipation. It's an astringent, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It may promote constipation as well.
So bad idea. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Next question.
Anyway, what were we talking? Right.
Where were we?
Yeah, where were we? Let's see. Gary writes, on your radio show of August 6th of this year, plastic and reconstructive surgeon Arthur Perry, MD, stated that people, as they age, lose about 1% of skin thickness per year after about age
30. You know what's so interesting? On August 6th of this year, I did not do a podcast with Arthur Perry, plastic surgeon.
Ah.
However, let's pose the question.
Yeah.
I know Dr. Perry, and I can't even remember the last time I did an interview with him, but years ago, so I don't know how that came up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So Gary is wondering, is there a way to rebuild this since we're losing about 1% of skin thickness after age 30. Doesn't that have more to do with hormones?
It does to some extent. I mean, it has to do with just aging, because everything weakens a little bit as you age. So skin is certainly a structure. Collagen deteriorates. The elasticity of the skin declines. You get saggier. This is to do with cross-linking and, to some extent, aging, as in advanced glycation end products. We discussed that. And you discussed it. I discussed it in some recent podcasts and some recent writings. By the way, if you hear some sirens in the background, I don't know if it's bleeding through into our broadcast, but I'm recording this from my studio that is in a building right next to the UN. And as we speak, the United Nations is convening in General Assembly. So there's going to be like all these cars are speeding by, these black Escalades and, you know, Chevy Tahoes and GM, you know, these big SUVs with guys peering out the window, literally with machine guns, you know, perched on their windowsill. Because they're bringing in all these bigwigs to talk at the General Assembly. So you'll hear sirens appear. Okay, so we're talking about skin thinning.
Rebuilding skin can cause the skin thinning,
And some of that is this advanced glycation end products, and I think you want to support collagen. You can use glucosamine chondroitin. I think that that actually helps the skin collagen as well as the joint collagen.
Vitamin C.
Vitamin C.
Vitamin C is also very helpful in maintaining skin elasticity, as well as the elasticity of our arteries.
Lysine. There is the fact that men tend to have thicker skin than women, so androgens can be helpful. Men, you know, when their testosterone declines, their skin becomes thinner and more fragile. Both sexes have a decline in DHEA, and DHEA may help to, support skin thickness and resilience. Those are some of the things that can be done. But hey, you know, at some point your skin, there's an inevitable process where it gets a little crepier, you know.
Crepey skin.
Yeah.
Is really it.
Yeah.
How much do you think sun damage plays into this?
Enormous.
UVA rays?
Enormous, because it literally zaps the collagen crosslinks. It's a free radical attack on the crosslinks. And I have to say that I was a little bit more pro tanning, you know, because it was a source of vitamin D. I have to say I'm a little bit, getting a little leery about chronic excessive sun exposure. I think moderate sun exposure is fine. I rarely use sunscreen when I go out in the summer. I gradually acquire a tan so I don't burn. But, you know, for especially certain skin types, we see a lot of patients who have very damaged skin, you know, the heliophiles, the sun lovers, the tanning addicts can have more damage. All right, this is a good point at which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts, as our listeners know. And so give us a preview of what we're going to take up in part two.
Can strontium help my osteoporosis?
Can it? Oh, yeah.
Can it? I've got some numbers for you, Dr. Hoffman.
Okay, we're going to weigh in on that subject. Yeah. When we return, today it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. You can get questions to us via radio program at AOL.com. Email your questions to us, and we'll field as many of them as we can each week. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Hoffman Center Nutritionist Layla Mutin, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.